Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Yeah, so no cock-a-doodle-doo.
Yeah, no rooster today.
Yeah. Nikki's stuck in traffic because you may or may not heard half of L.A. is pretty much burning. Yeah, we got the worst storms and winds and fires, and it's December. So half of
Go
the
figure.
Country is freezing. And
the other half is on fire.
Exactly.
The moon is like red. It's windy. It's crazy. It's crazy right now.
So we'll start without him. This is Ronan Rosner, usually the regular alternative co-host to Eddie Pence.
Yeah, that intro was very false advertising since neither Eddie Pence nor Nikhil Carulla are here.
Well, Nikki said he's going to be here in a minute. So we'll
he's in fire traffic. I'll give him credit for that. You know, he wasn't slacking.
It was. I know. It's been like that all day, you know, running shows here at the station. I can tell you.
Although I did make it here on time.
Yeah,
so
you did.
I was able to make it.
You always make it on
I
time.
I do, don't I? Am I the only one that does that?
Pretty much. You know, I can tell you, we got hosts that are regularly late to their own shows. So.
Well,
same excuse. Bad L.A. traffic.
Well did you just move here?
Yeah, exactly.
I co-host the shows occasionally,
and
when Nikhil asked me to come and be a guest, I was like, oh, cool, I can, like, relax. There's usually, like, 10 minutes of BS between the two hosts, and then I don't have to push any buttons, and I just have to answer questions, and now here I am, you know, co-hosting the show.
And you're the
I was
guest.
Just going to be a guest today. Now I got a co-host.
Yep. Well, the voice that you're hearing is Brian Patton.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess we should have started with that.
Yeah, he's been here before as a co-host.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You just published a new book?
Yes, I'm a vegan chef. I'm a cookbook author. I've got a couple full-length cookbooks that I've written.
Yep.
And I started my own publishing company. It's called 99 Publishing. And
congratulations.
So thank you. I published this they're little single recipe cookbooks. So I started it because I looked at this enormous stack of cookbooks that I had in my house, and I only cooked like one or two recipes out of each one. Oh, wait.
Alas!
Oh, you made it. You made it through the fires.
I made it to
you
my own.
You do smell a little smoky.
Yeah. So we need that rooster. We need.
Yeah, I'm so uncomfortable without the rooster.
Hold on, hold on.
I'm so uncomfortable. I'm sure the audience
rooster.
Is probably so. Oh,
there
man.
We go.
Now the show has started.
Right. Yeah. So I was talking about. Well, hello.
Hello.
What's
high
up?
Five.
High five.
Good to see you,
good
sexy vegan.
I'm glad
vegan.
You made it. You made it. Yeah.
Dude, the fire is crazy.
It's insane, dude. It is insane. I'll come back to what I was talking about.
Yep.
But the ones in Ventura...
No. You can talk about what you were talking about.
The ones in Ventura, my buddy Mark, his old apartment was this one apartment that burned down.
Wow. Really?
I know Mark. Yeah, you know him. Yeah, so like he texted me. He's like, dude, that was my apartment on the news, his old apartment. And he sent a picture of me sitting on his balcony that is now like in ashes.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
I saw that apartment on the news.
Yeah, that was his old apartment. That's like that three-story one with the balconies. Yeah, that was my buddy's apartment.
Dude.
He lived there. I used to hang out there all the time.
When did he move away from there?
Oh, a couple years ago. So
man, that is nuts.
I mean... Just the whole hillside is just scorched. It's just ash. There's this house across the way that is just not there anymore. Like the whole thing is like looks like a bomb hit it. It's pretty insane.
Yeah, you know what? I could see the you could probably see the smoke from your
house. I could see smoke from both different fires. Like, you
know, there's one in Ventura, and Santa Clarita.
So, oh, okay. So, but that one is actually moving. It's funny. I just saw this. this is the weather, the fire. oh, okay, this is now the fire news. The fire news. Wake up, fire news. So Moorpark, which is more west,
right?
Is actually threatened more by the Santa Clarita one than the Ventura one, even though
because
that's
the winds?
Because the winds, because yeah. the Santa Clarita, or, I'm sorry, the Ventura one is moving west towards the ocean, and the other one's moving the same way because of the winds. So even though Ventura is closer to Moorpark, Moorpark's actually more threatened by the one that's all the way up in Santa Clarita. And it's
I could, like, you know what? The Napa Valley, mm-hmm. you know, those I thought were bad.
Yeah.
I think these are even worse.
Yeah. Well, yeah, in terms of area and the amount of, and how many people die there? Over 40.
Where? In the Napa Valley.
Yeah. Yeah. So
there's only been one fatality so far, and it was from a car accident. Of somebody evacuating.
Really?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That,
yeah. And that, yeah. That was
Isn't
it.
That ironic?
It. It's like, so strange. I think there should be a song written about that.
I think here it's just the area is much bigger and less crowded.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But you still had a few.
Well, you got the winds, the Santa Ana winds.
Yeah.
They carry all those embers and
and
just
the fire
spreads.
Just jumps. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So when they're trying to contain one, it's just like.
It's just insane that, like, the burning of our land is just inevitable. Like, it's always going to, like, every year around the same time, it's just going to, like, catch on fire and burn.
And they say because global warming is such a big factor, you're going to see more of it.
Yeah.
And the fact that we had two back-to-back.
It's
going to
be worse, yeah.
And you know what? I honestly think these were two of the worst fires that we've had.
And the winds were just ridiculously.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was one like a year and a half ago, maybe like La Tuna Canyon or something in that same area. And this one has already surpassed that one in terms of acreage. It's
acreage. Yeah. I didn't think I'd use that word today.
I was listening to the news on the way over.
No, he's a publisher now.
I'm a publisher.
I know
his words. I know all big words, and I can put them in
sentences. Not just vegetables, folks.
No, not just vegetables. I also know lots of adjectives.
Well, what was the story you were talking about?
Oh, I was talking about my new publishing company where I publish these little. It's like the iTunes of cookbooks. So I was telling Ronan about, you know, I looked at my house and there's stacks and stacks of cookbooks. I never cooked out of them. Like, I cooked maybe one recipe out of this one.
About a year since you put it up there.
Yeah. So it's just over a year. Thank you for remembering.
Yeah, good job. I remember.
So I thought, man, what would people be interested in just having that one recipe at? Like, out of the book. Like, I have a book with 100 recipes in it. Maybe I cook one recipe out of it. Like, I just want that recipe, and I don't want this giant book taking up space. So, you know, a digital download or an ebook is not a new idea, but
it is for a cookbook.
Kind of. I mean, my focus was, the thing that's different about it is that one single book, which is about, you know, 15 to 20 pages, is focused on one thing. Like, one of them is mashed potatoes. It's called the only vegan mashed potato recipe you'll ever need. And I dive into, like, the science of potatoes and what happens to potatoes when you cook them.
Well, that's what you did on the TV show.
Right? That's correct.
So I learned things about mashed potatoes.
I filled an entire television segment, like, 8 minutes, only on mashed potato and potato knowledge.
It's a staple. And not just here in the U.S., everywhere around the world.
Especially for Thanksgiving. We're going to talk more about that in a second.
Right. So I was on. So these books are digital downloads, 99 cents each. It's like, I call it the iTunes of cookbooks. But instead of getting a whole album, you buy just a song.
A la carte.
A la carte.
If
so,
you will.
So you get, you just get, I like that recipe. I'll take that one. I don't want that one. And so right now it's just my recipes, but I'm working with other chefs right now.
What's the most popular recipe?
The most popular one probably is the mashed potatoes. Ah. That's the one.
ironic.
Isn't it?
Well, because when I watched your segment on TV, I was fascinated. I was like, man, how have I not known this much about potatoes?
Right, right.
When I eat mashed potatoes more than probably I eat most other foods, you know?
Right, right.
Like, I'm like, how do I not know that, you know, you should put them in cold water?
Yes, that's right.
Right?
Like, yeah, when you're cooking them. Yeah.
I didn't know that, yeah. You know? So you actually, I was like, huh. I was doing a lot of that when I was watching your segment.
So that's what you get. You get a lot of out of my books. So I do a vegan filet mignon in one of my books. I do a Neapolitan pizza. I do a...
What do you use for the filet mignon?
Yeah.
I use a wheat gluten, so it's called seitan. So
did you say Satan?
I did say Satan. You don't have a sound effect for that?
I do. It's... just kidding.
No, come on. All right, I'll take a whip. No, okay, you're failing. All right. So anyway, yeah. So seitan, it's made of vital wheat gluten, which is basically part of wheat. So right. If you make a wheat dough out of flour and water, just regular flour and water, and you knead it, make it into a dough. When you knead it, you develop the gluten, which are these sort of stretchy strands, the stretchy network of proteins.
So it has like fibers?
Yes. So it becomes a stretchy network of sort of fibers and proteins. And it's not fiber. It's protein, but it's sort of this. Can I say stretchy network one more time?
You can say stretchy network.
That's how it's defined. So that's what the gluten. That's why pizza dough is stretchy. That's why bread is chewy. It's
I think we've all dealt with stretchy network at one point.
I think we have. So then to make seitan, you rinse away all of this. You continue to knead it. You rinse it underwater, and you rinse away everything but the protein. Then you have this stretchy thing, and then you bake it or boil it or steam it or whatever, and it becomes this meaty, very meaty thing that you can make many different things with. And that's what I use for my filet mignon.
That's crazy.
They actually make it a lot easier in the store. They have a powdered wheat gluten, so you just add water, and you already have that whole process done for you. So it's just like...
But do you like to do it from scratch? Or
no, I've actually never done it from scratch.
Because it's too much stretchy network.
It's way... The networks of stretchiness are way too complicated. But... It's a long process. I've looked at the process. I'm like, man, I don't need to do it. I could just buy the flour.
I don't need to do it that bad.
No, I'm not that dedicated. but anyway, so that's what I make my filet mignon out of.
And you know, you really don't like. Brian was an avid meat eater.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, like, you know, just like a regular,
America. Like America.
Yeah.
You weren't quite Texas, but you were like. You were very Pennsylvania.
I was very Pennsylvania. That's where I was from. Yeah, I like me a good cheesesteak.
Yep.
I like me a good, what else do we eat in Pennsylvania? I forget. Pierogies. They don't have meat in them, but I love a good pierogi.
I love pierogies. Yeah. Those are good.
Yeah, those are very
good. Hoagies? What's that called?
Pierogi?
No.
Oh, hoagie? Oh, yeah, hoagies, definitely. Like hoagies. Oh, absolutely. Subs, like a hoagie, right? A grinder, a sub. Yeah. So that's like, that's got every meat.
And you
in
don't
it.
Miss
yeah.
any of that.
No, I make it all vegan. I make it all vegan.
So because you found ways to make it exciting.
Yes, yeah. You like the filet mignon, I made a hoagie. You know, which is like an Italian sub or whatever. I make different lunch meats and stuff out of seitan, out of tofu, out of different things. And then you just put all the same toppings on. It's, you know,
See, I like veggie burgers and all that. What about you, Renan?
Yeah, I do. We were just talking about it before we started. I went vegetarian a few years ago.
I remember that.
You know what? Every once in a while, I kind of, you know... Take a little taste of just to see.
You're out of the club.
And
I'm writing to the Prime Minister.
I agree. I'm not a fully dedicated
vegetarian.
Okay. But I don't eat meat. I just kind of, just to see if I can tolerate it.
Right.
And the thing is, as time passes, it just becomes harder to digest, and I just don't enjoy it anymore.
So when you go back to meat, you actually have problems digesting the meat?
Yeah, and I usually take like a little piece, just, you know, a taste. Really, I really don't eat a whole, meal. But I can tell you, I mean, the best thing I ever did was going vegetarian. And the reason I started was because I just couldn't, you know, I enjoyed meat just like any other person, but I saw how the industry is treating those animals.
Yeah.
It's just brutal.
Yeah.
I mean,
It's ridiculous.
It's nothing. There's nothing humane about it. No. Even if they say humanely raised, cage free.
This is
all a bunch of BS. It's just it's just like
marketing
terms, and nothing else. They make a guideline that says, oh, the cage can be this much bigger, and oh, that's called free range. The government's complicit in all this stuff.
Exactly.
They subsidize the meat industry, the dairy industry. So, they get away with a lot of stuff. And
did you both get deeper into kind of like discovering all of these points to prevent you from wanting to go back?
Yeah, that's exactly sort of the path it took. I became vegan for health purposes. I was overweight. I wanted to just try to eat healthier. I started working for the company I work for, where I'm the chef now. It's called Veg and Out. We're a vegan meal delivery service. And I started working there, and I thought, I could be vegan for a month. Let me try that, see what it's like. And then by the end of the month, I dropped a couple pounds. It was not that difficult because I had access to the food. I worked for this food company, so I get to take a little bit home. I'm a cook, chef. I cook for myself. Very important to be able to cook for yourself, especially when you're going to make the transition into veganism, because, the convenience – I mean, we have a lot of convenience foods now that are vegan, but at the time it was just kind of difficult. Eating out was kind of difficult. It's much easier now. A lot of restaurants are adding stuff. But anyway, so a month went by, 2 months went by. I kept going. 10 months later, I dropped like 60 pounds.
Wow.
But it's within that time of where I'm like looking for vegan recipes and just the more times I type vegan into my search engine, the more times like I'll see a little PETA video or a little animal cruelty type video or post, and you just can't help but sort of start seeing that stuff, and then you just kind of make that connection where you're like, all right, I'm feeling awesome, I'm thriving, and nobody has to get hurt. It's just better all around. It's better for the environment. It's better for the animals. It's better for, the rest of the humans.
Well, I'll tell you something that made me want to maybe consider going vegetarian. Somebody said that no matter like all the carbon emissions, meaning all the, you can drive your solar car or your electric car, it will not compare to if you go vegetarian,
right?
Because of how much the raising the cattle.
It's
the
cow. So
even just a preparation of, let's say, a piece of steak, the amount of water wasted, and,
The amount of water and resources that go into like a pound of ground beef is like can grow like food for 50 people. Or so, I mean, I'm just making that up off the top of my head, but
don't quote them.
Don't quote me.
No, but if you go online, you can.
Yeah, if you go online, you see those all the time, and it's like the amount of. Oh, what did I just see one? It's like the amount of water used to grow like a pound of ground beef was like 60 flushes of the toilet, or like 3 months of showering, or something like that. So, when people are when people are. Saying, oh, I'm trying to save water, I'm taking a shorter shower, just don't eat a hamburger. It's an enormous difference in the amount of resources used. And you're growing all this grain and corn that you feed to the cows, and then it goes into the cow, and it grows the cow, and then you eat the cow. You just eat the first stuff. The cow's the middleman, and it doesn't add anything good to it. It just adds like cholesterol and saturated fat and all this bad stuff and hormones, of course, because they inject inject them with hormones for all different reasons and antibiotics.
What was the movie that either of you saw that made you want to go vegetarian?
It wasn't a movie. Yeah. There were movies that I watched around that time. Or what did I read? Fast Food Nation was one, I think.
I've heard Forks Not Knives.
Forks Over Knives. I was already vegan when Forks Over Knives came out. So Forks Over Knives is good. Vegan documentaries that are out. Veducated is one that came out several years ago. I think it's still on Netflix. I really like that one. It takes a light approach. It takes a realistic approach. It basically just takes these three sort of regular people, I think it's three people, and just, they become vegan for like 6 weeks or something. It's sort of about their journey. And I feel like that one is like one of my favorites. Some of the other ones are a little sensational. Like, I don't know if you saw like What the Health.
Yeah,
that was like
I've
a big deal
it.
On Netflix. Like, a couple months ago it came out.
It didn't really talk about going vegan. It just talked about how the connection between pharmaceuticals, I think, the agriculture and the food industry and the government. and they're all hand in hand. Well, so that, they're not necessarily aiming for your health.
Well, you're thinking of Cowspiracy, I think, possibly. It was by the same one. Because in What the Health, they did talk.
I like this pun.
They did talk. Yeah. I know. Yeah, it's the same makers, actually, the same. But anyway, so What the Health, it talked about both. It talked about how the government is sort of intertwined with the pharmaceuticals and with the media industry. But it also, it made a lot of health claims that were sort of hyperbolic. Like, it was very exaggerated and
bloated.
Sensational.
Right.
I'm not a doctor, so I can't refute those. But you know, some of the anecdotal things that they had a person, they're like, oh yeah, I went vegan within 2 weeks, I was off all my medication.
Yeah, right.
Like, don't say that. Right. Yeah, that doesn't happen to everybody.
Yeah.
Like that doesn't happen to everybody. And my favorite / least favorite part of this movie is that so they're talking to about diabetes, right? And they're talking about how certain meats and things cause diabetes, or animal products, whatever. So the guy who's the filmmaker calls like the American Diabetic Association, right? And his beef with them is that he looks at their blog. He looks at the food blog on the on the American Diabetic Association's website or whatever organization he's calling, and it had all these recipes with foods that, according to a bunch of studies, cause diabetes. Mm-hmm. So he calls up, woman answers the phone. He's like, "Hey, I was wondering why on your blog you have this recipe, this, because I have this." He starts quoting all the studies about how this causes diabetes, and she's like, "Oh, I really can't answer that." And then it cuts, and he's like, another phone call, another non-answer. I'm like, that was the receptionist. She doesn't know anything about it. It was like little stuff like that that was like sensational, where it was just sort of manipulated, like, to make it sound like, oh, the big bad company is being very secretive, which they probably are. But
any documentary or any media does that.
Yeah, but
it's
that was
really hard.
That was so annoying
that.
To me,
right.
Among other things. But there were things like that I didn't love it. And I don't think a movie like that that's so sensational, I don't think that makes, because a lot of people started to go vegan or try it out or whatever. I don't think that makes permanent vegans. I think that scares people and be like, holy shit, I gotta go vegan right now. I'm just gonna throw all my meat away and buy all these frozen veggie burgers and then I'll be fine. You're not gonna be fine because you're not taking an interest in your food, and you're not, learning. You're not learning about your food. You're just saying, okay, everything I'm eating is vegan. This processed vegan cheese, this processed vegan meat. That's not going to fix anything. And that's all people would know if they just switch on a dime because they saw something really scary or they saw a PETA video from a factory farm. Like, I feel like you kind of got to ease into it, even though the animals shouldn't have to sit around and wait for us to dip our toes in the water. But. If you're really going to turn people vegan, I think it's got to be gradual. I think they need to take time and just slowly phase meat out as they learn how to cook different vegetables, different grains, things that they never had before. And then you eventually find that it's not restrictive. It opens you up. It opens your mind to so many different foods. But I really think that a gradual, it doesn't have to. It shouldn't take a year. It should take a couple months.
Right.
Before you can, go fully vegan, because there's so many issues around it. Like, not only just the food, but there's social issues. Like, when you go out to eat, how do you manage that? Like, you don't want to look like an idiot in front of your friends, or your family, or not that you look like an idiot, but everybody has their own way of dealing with being the oddball or being the different one. And I just see a lot of people get really scared about going to Thanksgiving on their first Thanksgiving as vegan or whatever. And some people don't make it through that. Like, they'll just be like, all right, well, I'll just have a little turkey and blah, 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 and then they're not vegan anymore. That's because they didn't take time to sort of build up their skills. You got to become like this ninja. Like, I could go into any restaurant now, open up the menu, be like, boom, 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 I just made myself.
What about Korean barbecue?
I haven't been to Korean barbecue in a long time. What, they got noodles? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you have to give up. Some things you just have to give up.
Right, some things I'll just have to make it myself at home. Yeah. Like, whatever. So yeah, Korean barbecue. I think they usually
they give you a lot of vegetables, right? a lot of sides.
Yeah, so you just got to ask about the sauces. You call ahead. You just, you know, you check the website. You know, you just gotta have to be prepared, and it's a whole new language that you're not used to. So that's why I don't think that people should just dive right into it without educating themselves.
For me, I think a lot of it is like recipes. Like I went out to dinner for my girlfriend's birthday right before Thanksgiving, and we went to this place called Laurel Hardware, and I had this thing called sprout lollipops.
All right.
It was a mix between Brussels sprouts and kale.
Okay.
And what they did was they flash fried them with they tossed it with a little bit of ranch dressing and then avocado. And it was, we ordered a bunch of stuff, and that was everybody's favorite dish. And I asked the restaurant, I said, what's everybody's favorite dish when they come in there? They said the sprout lollipops. So we ended up cooking sprout lollipops for Thanksgiving.
Oh, how cool is that?
Because it was so, and it was it was one of my favorite dishes.
And that's
a great idea. It shows you how kale and Brussels sprouts are usually
and that's
not
what
a
we
lot
used.
Of people like this.
And I think a problem is, like, you know, when you were growing up and your kid made, or your mom made Brussels sprouts or green beans or something, you know, they were probably like boiled to death, and, you know, they just weren't prepared well. But now, like, that restaurants are starting to embrace, you know, more vegetarian things and whole foods and using other vegetables.
Well, so the ingredients, you obviously, you get more flavor out of these foods.
Yeah, so you can.
But a lot of it's how you prepare it.
Yeah, so like if you fry Brussels sprouts, it's fucking delicious.
It is. And I don't miss meat when I have that. It's
Or if you roast them, like, you know, it's all about in the preparation of certain things. And, you know, like even my kid, my 4-year-old, like that's about the only vegetable I can get him to eat is Brussels sprouts, which is totally bizarre.
Yeah, and rare.
Yeah,
They're the best.
Yeah.
I hated Brussels sprouts for a long time.
Yeah, so, you know, as restaurants and people start to embrace, like, just a wider array of vegetables, you'll find that they are mostly good. Except for water chestnuts. I fucking hate those. They're stupid. Sorry. Sorry, water chestnuts, taking some shrapnel.
Charge them! Into war!
There's no point to water chestnuts.
Well, let's talk about your TV appearance.
Oh, okay, sure.
It was awesome.
Thank you.
Tell us about how you got the spot and what you did on
the Sure. So it was on the Hallmark Channel. It's their sort of daily show. It's called Home and Family. So it's just like it's a home and family. It's about your home and about your family.
Yeah.
So they have different segments. There's like 12 different segments on each show. The show is pretty remarkable now that I've seen the production of it. But you know, they'll have a DIY segment where you build a arts and crafts, and then they'll have a makeup segment or a cooking segment or whatever. So I did a cooking segment, and the way it came to be is kind of weird. It's sort of like, you know, people who listen to this show, they usually listen to like young musicians coming up, and it's that thing where, like, you never know who's watching you. You never know who's in the audience. So 2 years ago, I was doing a cooking demo at this little store in Santa Monica, it was a Thanksgiving cooking demo, actually. And there were like 12 people sitting around the bar, and, you know, I was just doing my thing, just talking and chit-chatting and cooking and demonstrating a bunch of Thanksgiving dishes. And, you know, they all got my information, my email address, and my website. And a few days later, I get an email from somebody who was in the audience there, one of the 12 people who were watching me. And he was like, hey, I'm a reality TV producer. I really liked
That's
what
amazing.
You, I really liked what you were doing or whatever. He's like, I'd like to work together. I want to kind of get into the food, you know, TV type thing. I'm like, all right, yeah, me too. So he came, and like he came to my work, and he did like a little, shot some video, and we did like a sizzle reel, as they call it in the industry, like just a little highlight reel. And he like shopped it around, like nothing really happened. You know, he pitched some ideas to some people. He's in the business. I don't know. I'm just like, he'd email me every once. He's like, hey, you know, I did this, and I'm like, great. Like, let me know when something happens. I don't know. And then so then now it's like 2 years later, and he got a job as a producer for this Home and Family show, and he's been pitching me for like a year, which I didn't even know about. They were a little weary on the vegan thing.
Why? That's so ridiculous.
It, you know what? It's.
I mean, 20 years ago, I'd say, yeah, you have a point.
Well, now? It's like a show that, you know,
it's
like
it
a.
Is? It's gatekeepers. Huh? Gatekeepers get in the way of all of
that. I suppose.
Drives me nuts.
Sure, sure, sure. But I mean, I think the audience is more meat and potatoes.
How do they know? They don't know.
I don't know. Well, they know. I don't know.
If I love eating meat. I do. But if I go to a restaurant and the dishes that are all the vegetable dishes are better than the meat dishes, I'm a food fan more than I'm a meat fan. You know what I mean? So, like, obviously, you don't know unless you get that exposure. So
right.
I think it's stupid for people to make that decision.
Yeah, I don't know. I do too. but that, I guess that's what happened. I don't know. So it took them a while, and they came around, and then, so they had me on, and I did my mashed potatoes because I feel like that was something.
You did it for Thanksgiving. It was like a Thanksgiving.
Yeah, it was right before Thanksgiving. So, and you can see it. You go to Home and if you type, like, I go by the Sexy Vegan. That's my, like, moniker or whatever.
Yeah, baby.
So if you just type Sexy Vegan, the Sexy Vegan Hallmark Channel, you'll see the clip. You'll see the recipe for my mashed potatoes. And I just dropped tons of mashed potato knowledge, and it was very fun to do. And I think everybody was entertained.
What was really awesome is, like, you were getting grilled about mashed potatoes doing it vegan.
Yeah.
And then they were like, what's his name? The Sexy Vegan. And you were like, oh, I got to like explain this because you don't really know who I am right now.
Yeah.
But let me lay it down.
Right.
I was like, Brian, good recoveries, man. Like,
well, there's a lot. Yeah, there's a lot of crosstalk because like there's the host who I'm interacting with. And then there's people on the side, like the other hosts and guests from the show. And everybody's like,
Chiming in.
But I handled the chimes, I suppose.
No, you were great. Oh, I was kind of like, I kind of wanted to tell the host, like, shh, like, let him talk. You know,
it was fun. Like, I felt pretty good about it. Yeah. Like, I felt that the host that I was working with, Debbie, she was very good at, coordinating the whole thing. And, she's a pro, so. Anyway.
Was that nerve-wracking, kind of cooking on TV or kind of talking about it?
No.
That's kind of a weird thing.
I have the nerves right up until it starts.
You know what I mean? It's not like you and a camera where you're like, and this is what I do here. This tastes good. It's like you're cooking, you're getting interviewed, and you want to get the recipe out.
Well, it's nerve wracking because I want to make sure that I get all the information that I want to out. Like I want to hit all the points that I think are important about these potatoes. But then at some point, I'm just like, all right, it's not only about that. The recipe's up on the website,
right?
So I don't stress about that as much because I know that they will eventually get the information. And if there's something entertaining happening between like some banter or whatever, like just let it, just go with it. I prefer that actually than just to talking by myself to a camera. I would rather have like five people there that I can talk to.
That's, well, it was cool. I was so fascinated.
That's less nerve wracking.
You would talk about how you want to get results. And you would do it with scientific facts about preparing a potato.
Right.
You're like, most people don't know this, but da 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 da.
Yeah, sure.
And I was like, oh, yeah, that's awesome.
Sure.
And he'd say, this is why I like my mashed potatoes to be this.
Yeah.
And this is how you get it to be this. And I know people that watch that probably cook mashed potatoes all the time, probably thought about that in a different context.
Sure, they learned a lot. And just quickly, like my recipe uses two different potatoes. It uses russet potatoes and Yukon Gold potatoes, right? So the reason I do that, now I'm going to go into the whole thing.
Yeah.
But so russet potatoes are very high starch. And high starch, basically when you cook a potato, there's starch and water inside the potato, and what happens is the starch granules start to absorb the water that's inside the potato. Starch likes to absorb water, and that pushes the granules apart. That makes the space. That makes them fluffy. That makes them tender, and that's what basically cooks them. It also releases some of that water as steam. So
or stretchy network.
No, there's no stretchy network of gluten in potatoes, which is hilarious because like a couple years ago when there was like everything was like gluten free, right? I go to these like trade shows, and somebody's like, would you like to sample some gluten-free mashed potatoes? I'm like, motherfucker, there's no gluten in mashed potatoes. What are you doing? And then like you get like a thing of water. It's like gluten-free water. I'm like, how did you get the gluten out of that water? That is amazing. I swear to God, if you get Hansen's
marketing.
Hansen's like club soda or whatever, or tonic water, it says gluten-free on the side. Of course it's gluten-free. It's
and
water.
And that's the reason why you got channels like Hallmark who are very afraid of the vegan or vegetarian labeling because it become this fad that everybody's like gluten-free, but it's gluten in everything. That's the problem now.
Yeah, like things do become a fad, but I think really veganism is... I think people are starting to see that it's not a fad because Pizza Hut is going to have vegan cheese.
Really?
They already have it, I think, in England. So Pizza Hut's going to have vegan cheese here. Like, you know, Fat Burger now has a vegan burger.
Really?
Yeah.
Because they figure out there's
a market. Yeah.
Yeah.
All these vegan companies are getting bought up. Like, you know, of the like the mock meats that I buy and stuff, Field Roast, Gardein. They're all getting bought up by these big corporations. Who are meat companies, basically, but I mean, that's a whole other sort of source of controversy within the sort of vegan world is, you know, it's sort of this conflict where, okay, this company, let's say Field Roast, who makes like these sausages and all this stuff that I like, they get bought by this big company who is a meat producer. So now I'm still going to buy Field Roast, or am I? Like, because now I'm supporting this meat producing company.
And why
would
they do that? Why would the vegan company
they would do that? Because because these bigger companies have greater distribution, they have greater advertising ability.
Yes,
they have the
idea. But the whole point is that moral compass too, right?
There is that, but you can also look at it as though these companies can get these vegan products in front of more eyeballs.
Or talks.
Both cash, both money and visibility. So so now when you go to a Walmart in Kansas, you might see a vegan product that previously you can only get in like a major city or something like that. And somebody might say, hey, yeah, you know, I heard about that vegan thing. Maybe I'll try this vegan meat. But if it wasn't there, if such and such like giant food corporation didn't buy up smaller vegan corporation, that would never happen. So it is a double-edged sword, but again,
but it's for the good.
But
it's for the good.
I feel it is, but there's also sort of this, you know, idea of, you know, all these big companies just buying up things and sort of creating monopolies, which we also don't want. But I think in this case, for veganism to grow, like, we kind of have to dance with the devil a little bit now, because the federal government doesn't subsidize vegan companies. It subsidized meat companies. If it subsidized vegan companies, then they wouldn't need to be bought up by these meat corporations.
Right.
So then we have to deal with, you know, we have to change the government. And we actually the vegan,
I'm all for that.
The vegan, well, I mean, that's
the tip of the fucking
iceberg.
Issue.
I mean, but so we actually do now have a lobby group. I'm blanking on the name. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to all of those who are in it. But anyway, it's a vegan lobby group who are now lobbying Washington, D.C. on behalf of the vegan companies. So it's a, you know, little conglomeration of some vegan companies who grouped up and started this sort of lobbying entity that can speak on behalf of vegan companies at, you know, in Washington, D.C. So that's part of it. We need the government needs to change and to stop. I know. Did I just like go on for like ever about that?
I'm kidding.
I'm sorry. But anyway, so that's like sort of the thing where, you know, a non-vegan company buys up a vegan company. It's bad because you don't want to support
it'd be
this
great
company,
to see,
but it's good because it gets
in front of more. I bet there are so many people that would agree with this. Like, you know, for people like myself that are like on the go, on the move, doing stuff, getting the vegetarian option at like a fast food joint or a sandwich joint, I mean, that makes a huge difference.
Sure.
But a lot of it is not available in those quick, like,
no,
you have five minutes to eat and you got
it's becoming,
you know?
Like, I think somewhere, Australia perhaps, McDonald's is testing out a vegan burger. There is a list you can go to online that tells you how to veganize, like, all the stuff from Taco Bell. So you can get like a vegan Crunchwrap Supreme. You just have to like make all these substitutions or whatever. But you can do it. Like, they'll do it. Like, and they, it's totally like they, it works with their system of whatever, of substitutions. You can say, I'd like a Crunchwrap Supreme, leave this out, double this, blah, 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 blah. And you get a Crunchwrap Supreme. I joked that I wanted to get that process tattooed on my arm. So I always remembered the exact substitutions to make. I still might do that. That would be my first tattoo. That'd be a weird first tattoo to get. Oh, you know, yeah. The vegan version of the
you have every tattoo on. It's like, you sure you want this?
Yeah, yes, this is my first tattoo.
I need
it's like the most important thing. It says a lot about me. But anyway,
the problem is that many places that they're trying to offer vegan choices, so that usually you always find that black bean and legume hamburger, right?
Right.
We're tired of it.
We are. I do
give
not disagree.
Well, yeah.
That's why we have some really great companies. One's called Beyond Meat. The other one's called Impossible. And they make these burgers that are like, they're like beef. It's insane. Like, they use...
Is it the one with the red juice?
Yeah.
With the beet juice?
Yeah, yeah.
It feels like it's bleeding?
It looks like it's bleeding or whatever.
Really?
And it tastes... Both of them... they taste pretty good. It's the closest thing to a beef burger I've tasted since, you know, in the 11 years I've been vegan. It's pretty remarkable what they've done, and they use some plant proteins, and they use like this. It's like this heme stuff from plants, which is like blood. It gives you that sort of bloody sort of color and taste. I don't fully understand it. It's
detail.
Crazy. Yes, the Impossible Burger is one of them, and Beyond Meat, the Beyond Meat Beyond Burger is another one, and it's they're both. It's pretty remarkable.
I'm gonna pull this from. I know I can feel this from our listeners. You know, a lot of times people try to go vegan or vegetarian, and it's the cost factor too.
Well, it.
Not
I mean,
anymore. Not anymore.
No, it's still pretty expensive to get produce.
If you buy,
it depends on where you buy.
Yeah,
you don't buy it at Whole Foods.
Whole Foods, exactly.
Yeah, don't buy your produce at Whole Foods. That's insane. I'm sorry. I probably shouldn't say like stuff like.
But yeah, now that Amazon bought them, the prices
are supposed to be coming down. But
there's so many options right now.
Yeah.
You go to here in LA, you got Ralph's. A lot of options like
look,
these.
Costco,
Target
is the biggest retailer of organic produce in this country.
True.
So Costco, if you were looking to go all organic, I don't even eat all organic, but and stuff at Costco is inexpensive for the most part. So you can produce.
You just have to plan.
You have to plan. It's all very right,
so
important.
You know what?
To plan
things out. Let's kind of give our listeners like three or four ways. To plan a way to budget your new vegetarian or vegan diet.
Great. You do bulk cooking. Okay, first of all, buy things in bulk. Buy beans in bulk, buy rice. You go to the bulk bins, you scoop it out. Like, the difference between rice in a bulk bin might be $2.99 for a pound or something, and a packaged one, like by a fancy brand, which is almost the same thing, maybe it's organic or something, could be like $6.99 or something like that. So buy in bulk from the bulk bins and do bulk cooking, where I'll do a big pot of beans, I'll do a big pot of rice, and then I'll make different dishes from that throughout the week. Whenever I make a dinner, I make sure that I make enough for leftovers, so that saves me time and it saves me money because I'm just using the same stuff that I have. So buying in bulk and doing sort of batch cooking at the beginning of the week or throughout the week and making sure that you have leftovers, that saves you time and money. And shop seasonally as best you can. Depends on where you live. Like California, we have all produce all the time.
Well, there's farmers markets,
and
we
have lots of farmers markets, which is not always the most cost effective.
Sometimes they tend to be expensive.
It can. I could definitely spend a lot of money at a farmer's market more so than I would like if I go to Sprouts grocery store or something like that. That's where I usually buy my like vegetables for the week and whatever. So, don't rely too much on like the store bought sausages and burgers and pre made stuff, because that can get very expensive very quickly.
Sure.
So just try to keep more whole foods, whole grains. Grains are inexpensive. Beans are inexpensive. Tofu's inexpensive. Tempeh's inexpensive. And just shop the deals. Like, but it's really about learning cooking techniques, learning just some basic stuff about how to prepare food and sort of.
And a lot
widening
of that stuff can spoil
things
very fast too.
What's like what?
Like there are some produce that will.
Well, sure, sure.
You know, so like, what's your?
Yeah,
you get groceries. What's your window of time where you're like, I need to cook all this?
I do it weekly. You know, I go shopping every Monday for home, and then I'll do a bunch of batch cooking. I'll make a big thing of hummus. I'll make a big thing of salsa. I'll just get a bunch of vegetables. You know, now I'll do winter squash or whatever. I'll just cube them up and roast them, and then I have that. And then I throw that into a salad. I throw that into a tacos. You know, I have a bunch of stuff, a pot of beans, a pot of rice. And, by Tuesday, I've already got my food for the week kind of done. And then And yeah, you definitely have to pay attention to things that spoil faster. You just, you know, you have to use that stuff up first, like your lettuce and your mixed greens and things like that. But your heartier stuff, you can, you know, you can let go towards the end of the week. Or, you know, potatoes and things like that last for a long time. So I don't worry too much about spoilage. I just don't overbuy. You know, I buy what I know that I need. Now I'm, you know, I've done it, been doing it for a long time, so I kind of know how much stuff I need. But sitting down and doing a meal plan at the beginning of the week, best thing I ever started doing.
And what about so a lot of parents would want to eat like that, but their kids may not, you know, necessarily respond to it. How have your kids responded to it?
Fortunately, they don't have a choice. So they respond because I tell them that's how they
lone wolves.
Eat. No, it's really funny. I was really nervous. I have a 4-year-old and I have an 8-month-old. So I was really nervous when I was having kids. I was like, oh man, like how am I gonna like do this? How am I gonna convince them like when they go to their friend's party like not to eat a certain thing? Blah 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 blah. And I didn't really have to do too much. Like my kid now, like from 4 years old, we had Halloween, right? He was just coming back from house. He would go up to a house and say trick or treat. They put him in, and he'd ask them, "Is this vegan?" Now I didn't.
Wow.
I didn't sit down and have a big talk with him where I was like, "You must." Ask. I didn't drill any of this into him. He sees me do it. We go to the grocery store. He's like, "Can I have that?" I'm like, "Let me check if it's vegan." And I'll read the thing. And I'll say it's vegan or it's not vegan. And so he just picked up on that. I didn't have to force him to do that or trick him into doing it or drill it into his head.
He just started naturally. Did he eat it if it wasn't vegan?
Does he?
Did he eat it?
He has eaten things that are not vegan. Like if we were at a party, I wasn't paying attention. He walked by the cookie table, shoved in a couple cookies. What am I going to do? Like, right. I'm not. Veganism is not about being like personal purity. Right. Like if you try to do that, I see a lot of people do it. Especially new vegans, you drive yourself crazy and you say, this is too hard. And then you tell your friends, that was too hard. And then they tell their friends, yeah, you know, I was going to try being vegan, but I got a friend said it was too hard, so I'm not going to try it. So that's why we come back to documentaries and stuff like that that are sensational, that you know, people change overnight. They're not going to be permanent vegans, and they're going to tell all their friends it's going to be like this ripple, negative ripple where you're putting out fake news, maybe we could call it, about that veganism is hard. It's just because you didn't do it right, because you dove in too fast. Not that it was your fault. You were like shocked into it. You were hit over the head with a hammer by a factory farm video or by some sensational documentary, and then you got disoriented and you're just like, I got to do it, and you didn't like plan. So, and then you failed. So then you scare a lot of other people out of it.
Just like with everything else, it has to be gradual. I remember for me that the change was, I mean, when I decided to do to make that change, for me it was like, okay,
make that change.
I need two things. I need to that the food will taste like I'm used to,
right?
More or less, you know. So spices and everything else, keep it, even though it's tofu and not chicken. If I can at least flavor it.
Sure.
And the second thing is load up on protein, because protein pretty much keeps you...
Because you won't get hungry.
Yeah, exactly.
Protein and whole carbs, like sweet potatoes and, you know, whole food carbs.
Exactly. So that's why planning ahead is very important, because if you plan ahead and, you know, and of course research the recipes.
Yeah.
And if you prepare in advance, you have those meals prepared, and then you're guaranteed to have, you know, you got yourself covered.
Yeah, yeah, and you're not panicking like, oh my god, what am I going to make for dinner?
And then
you know,
you end up stopping at
McDonald's, fast food or something.
All right, here's the other question, okay. Gentlemen.
All right,
what's your guilty pleasure? What's the thing that you probably shouldn't eat, whether it's a sweet? Whether
chocolate
it's
for
beer,
me. Yeah, it's no brainer. Chocolate.
What's your vice? Chocolate for and milk chocolate or dark chocolate?
No, milk.
Let me think. What is the thing that I just go and I'll shove it in my face? I mean, I don't buy them because I do it, but potato chips.
Potato chips.
I mean, it's fried salty potatoes.
What's not to like?
What's not to like? I'm sure there's some other like.
So do you substitute it with something?
Or you can make it at home.
Yeah, I don't do that. Do I substitute it with something
like kale chips?
Longing?
Here,
just cut
pieces of potatoes and rub them with olive oil, spices, put them in the oven.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, sure.
There you go.
Yeah. So, potato chips. What do I got in my pantry? I like pretzels. I like me a good pretzel. I don't know why. And whiskey.
The moral of the story is you can be vegan, so you can drink the blues away.
You can. Hey, most alcohol is vegan. Not all of it, though.
Brian, I love all your cooking videos.
Oh, thank you. Oh, jeez.
Are you still doing more cooking videos?
You know, I do a live Facebook Live broadcast every week. Yes. So just follow me on Facebook, The Sexy Vegan.
You don't always do it at the same times, though.
I try. Well, that's because I have children, and life sucks. Yes. That's why. Life is great with children. You just can't do what you want when you want.
Sounds like it sucks.
Yes, if you like doing what you want when you want it, yes.
Which, so you have no freedom.
I have zero freedom. I only could do this at night because the kids are asleep, like a show like this. So, so I try to do it every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Guess what didn't happen today? Didn't have my show. So I try to do it as best I can. So that's the only thing I have time to do at this point. And I'll do like videos on Instagram and stuff like that. I started doing a live stream of me on the stair stepper in the morning at the gym. I call it Steppin' with Sexy. And I just treat it as a Q&A. And it gets me through my 15 or 20 minutes on the stair stepper where I just flip it on Instagram. I'm like, go live. And then
that makes you have to go.
It makes me have to go. I like going to the gym. Like, it's my alone time. It's 4 o'clock in the morning, but it's my alone time. That's it. Isn't that fucking sad?
That's crazy.
That my only alone time is at the gym at 4 in the morning. Like, that's it. That's the only me time I have. Just about. I know. And look at me. Do I even look like I go to the gym? It's fucking pathetic.
You do.
Thank you.
You look like you've been just.
I have been, I guess. So if you follow me on Instagram, several mornings per week, you can watch me on the stair stepper.
I like that.
Yeah, watch me sweat.
And you know what? I asked you what your most popular recipe was out of your books, but what's your favorite recipe out of your books? And where can people find it one more time?
All right. I know we've been talking about potatoes a lot, but my mashed potatoes are fucking ridiculous. They are insane.
I like that.
And they're very basic. So that's
your favorite, then?
That's my favorite. Like, they're perfect. They're perfect. So if you go to 99publishing.com, that 99-cent download, digital download, it's called the only vegan mashed potato recipe you'll ever need, and it's perfect. I'm sorry, I don't like to toot my horn in such a way, but I've done all the research.
But you love to stretch your network.
I have my stretchy protein network.
And where can people get that recipe?
99publishing.com. The number 99publishing.com. And you can find me at thesexyvegan.com. And just follow me on like social media, Instagram. The Sexy Vegan. That's where I'm most active, really.
Brian, I love interviewing you.
I love being here.
Because it's just always a great hang. Sometimes you co-host, but I love it when you're a guest because you definitely turn the page on people's minds of like, okay, this is what I was doing yesterday, but maybe tomorrow I'll do something a little different.
Great, that's great.
So you should know I'm eating a lot more vegetables because of
that's
you.
That's
so
excellent.
Maybe there'll be a time where I will flip the page.
Flip the page. Turn that page.
Well, make that change.
Make a change.
Well, come on. Brian, you are awesome.
Thank you.
One more time, I want you to just give everybody your handles and all your social media.
I am The Sexy Vegan at all places, and my micro books are at 99publishing.com.
All right. And Ronan, one last question. I want to ask how you made it through Thanksgiving as a vegetarian.
No problem at all. I just told everybody, don't go, don't try to change anything. I'll manage.
I ate the mashed potatoes.
I ate the vegetables.
You're all good.
Great. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's...
I reached a point where it just... I don't need it anymore.
Yeah.
Really don't.
Yeah.
Well, right on. Yeah. Well, guys... I'm ready to squash it up right now.
All right.
So we'll see you guys next week. On behalf of Ronan and myself and the sexy vegan himself, we'll see you guys here next week.